Welcome to Tuesday, another beautiful Tuesday in sunny San Diego, California, on the second anniversary of the Mightier 1090 ESPN. I'm John Browner, joined by none other than world traveler himself, Jason Lawhead, back from a corporate gig and a wedding. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they weren't the same thing. Corporations are now
although I would do
people.
It if the money was right.
And there you have it.
Somebody, if the money was right, I'd be like, "Hey, this guy's divorcing you. All right,
show up, tell some jokes."
Yeah, exactly.
You're cooking so bad, he's divorcing you.
Right,
the chicken again with the chicken.
And
that would be a great way to just gag divorce somebody.
Kind of thought of that, but that would be a great way to gag divorce somebody. You think it's going to be your anniversary party? You got a comedian there, and then you just start like, you know, especially if it's like the guy, you know. You start going in on the mother-in-law, all the things. Hey, this is all the material he's always wanted to say to his mother-in-law. And you just have like roast everybody on her side of the family and everything that went, like, you know, her friends and everything. That would be actually hilarious. That might actually be a funny like premise for a comedy movie, actually.
That would be a bomb skit too. Have you ever done skits?
Yeah, I mean, I was back in the day, I had some energy and did those types of little things. Now that the way, I guess, technology has advanced with the ability to do everything on your phone.
Right.
You know, there's actually an idea I have. I don't want to leak it, but there's an idea I have where I play both characters. You see this sometimes now on these reels TikTok. And stuff where, you know, TikTok and different reels. I'm not on TikTok. I guess that's my biggest faux pas. As I got older, I think I just got too old for comedy at the time when all these easy at your fingertips applications were able to just send all your creative juices off. So I don't know. I'm kind of one of those old school, still write stand up. Like, you know, I'm not, I'm still on skis when it comes to like comedy. I'm not a snowboarder or I'm not on that, you know,
you still roll your joints, so to speak.
There you go. Yeah. I'm still on skis. I still roll my joints. I don't have those, you know, what's that little like thing guys or people are on with the little like one wheel underneath the, you know,
yeah, skateboard. I don't get those either.
I'm still on rollerblades. I'm not on that little hover or whatever. Yeah, man. So, but yeah, there is a funny thing that has to do with like reffing that I want to do that I think I can just pull off by myself, where it's like I play the one idiot guy in the crowd that's yelling everything at the ref, and then the other guy has to be like, "No, you're not right. You don't even have the rule right. That's not a travel." Like, you know, like all that stuff.
It would be a great way to use your YouTube page.
And that's what I've been trying to do since I've implemented getting back to my YouTube page more with my comedy and trying to get this grasp and feel like, but you know, you have to want to do it, right? Like during COVID, I literally lost my eyesight because during COVID, when there was nothing to do, what did I do? I decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to dive in. I'm going to do a lot of editing, some videos. I'm going to promote myself while I have time. I'm going to learn some stuff, which I did. But my eyesight went because all I did was go to that phone, go to that device. I was on it going like, you know, watching YouTube tutorials or saying this, that, and the other thing. And you know, you're learning this and editing that. So I was, I never in my life put more FaceTime into a screen. But a lot of it was just, you know, learning a new thing or figuring out what's the best way to use these social media platforms that I really don't know how to use other than like having the profile and being like, here's my thought, here's my tweet, here's my video. I don't know who's ever going to see it or, you know.
Speaking of social media, is the place where you can find this show at any point in time to subscribe, like, and share is the iTunes Podcast Store and also YouTube under the Kaplan and Crew flag. Jason, where can they find you? On the YouTubes.
Yeah, so YouTube, Jason Law. Yeah, Jason Lawhead 7, right? YouTube.com/ Jason Lawhead 7 on YouTube, my most recent half hour.
That was the oldest way to explain how to find you.
I know, right?
You literally threw the backslash in there.
The backslash. I know. That's
don't ever
do that.
That
goes right back to what I was just talking about. So
don't ever do that again. The backslash. Yeah. Just go in the search bar and put Jason Lawhead.
Yeah, and then Jason Lawhead comedy on Instagram at Jason Lawhead on Twitter and
no backslash
here,
no
on
backslash
Browner and Lawhead. Search Browner and Lawhead on YouTube.
There you go.
But I guess you're already watching.
Yeah. This was a fantastic week for the Mightier 1090 to have an anniversary. If you were ever thinking of a way to get people to tune in to a radio station, have probably one of the more growingly recognizable faces get popped for steroids, and the market in which you record, have the guy play, and have your anniversary in the same week after a team had traded for, probably had made the greatest trade in the history of baseball, and now here we are. And we're going to talk about a lot on the show today. Obviously, we're going to continue to dive into the Tatis thing because it's taken another turn. This time, it may have gone off the road. We're also going to break down which NFL team you do not want to talk about during the season. The NBA released their Christmas schedule, and I only got one question. Why? And what else? And the Jeter, A-Rod, Manning cast on ESPN just, you know, stop trying to make certain things work. We'll get into that, and I'm not happy about it. But first up, you know, parents always want to help their kids, regardless of how much of a hard ass your dad probably is on you. He'll defend you publicly, and he'll chastise you at home. Same thing for your mother. But what's happening with the parents of Fernando Tatis Jr.? It's not good. Not only is it not good, they're not helping him. His father is now saying that Major League Baseball, in essence, punished him because they were jealous. I'm not making this up. His father, a former Major League Baseball player, came out, I think it was yesterday, actually, and said that Major League Baseball is punishing Tatis because they're jealous of him. The hypocrisy of Major League Baseball. And I just got two questions. Who at Major League Baseball is jealous of him? And two, if there's hypocrisy, show me someone else who popped positive that no one's talking about, that didn't get suspended. Show it to me. Because right now, you just sound like an angry dad who probably at this point, which I'm almost certain, gave his kid bad advice. He got caught because of you. And now you're doing the circus to try to take the heat off of him because you had something to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about, I mean, straw grabbing. I mean, that is straw grabbing to even bring up the preposterousness of they're jealous of him. Do you know how stupid and crazy that sounds? Do you know how stupid and crazy and just, you know, rip my shirt off in the parking lot, let's fight, but we're not really going to fight? It's crazy that sounds. This is what we talked about yesterday. What we talked about yesterday was what's the next thing that goes wrong? Do they keep getting bigger or does he really learn? Because if he's young and he's okay, you got to learn. Well, he's learning in reverse. He's learning with bigger issues as the next issue, not littler issues, not smaller issues where you go, okay, man, come on. Well, at least he's kind of, you know, shedding. It seems like he's layering it, not right. Shedding it. So I get the young part. I'm all for the, hey man, young, he bursted on the scene, this type of thing. And you can use that excuse once, maybe twice, but when twice and three times the things that you're trying to excuse are becoming more of a mountain, you're putting mountains now on a molehill. What you're doing is it's like, you have this, you know, compounding interest, but it's not good interest, right? Like it's the compounding interest that is negative in this sense. And so yes, this is another thing, like you said in the outset, parents will always parent in a certain way when it comes to, you know,
defending
your child, being there, saying you love them. I mean, even Jeffrey Dahmer's parents were like, hey, we love the guy. I mean, what he did was sick, but you know but then in the back, but had enough sense to be like, you know, we don't condone any of it. And in the back, room, you chastise or you do whatever. But now this is airing out. And now the media is ready to, you know, the media has never been bigger and more involved than it ever has. Tomorrow it will be slightly inch bigger. It's like how the national deficit grows by that little fraction penny over the course of a second. Tomorrow, the media will be just a, you won't notice it, but it'll be a little bit bigger than it was yesterday. And next week, the media and its outreach and where it goes will be a little bit bigger by a speck. And over a course of time, by 10 years from now, you will see the difference. Like we see the difference today than we did 10 years ago and 10 years before that. So they're everywhere to feed on this type of thing. And so now the parent who has always kind of been that parent or whatever has never been more exposed than they are right now. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, we just watched the movie King Richard recently. Great movie. As much as, you know, we hate what Will Smith did at the Oscars. I'm not one of those guys that I'm like, oh, I'm not going to watch this movie now. I want to see that movie because I love Serena and Venus and I wanted to see that movie. And, you know, from that time on, right. Like to the next parent, to the LeVar Ball, to now where we are with every parent in every sport, and even when they're professionals making more money than their parents would ever see in their lifetime, we still hear them, you know, as that almost child teen parent defending their kid against the mean coach or the, you know, right, tough league or whatever the case is, or why they're doing this to my child. Well, your child keep screwing up. And until you face that fact and sit them down and say, you need to get this person, that person out of your life. We need to replace those three people and figure out what kind of people. That's the brilliance of Venus and Serena's father, right? Like him or not for how he spoke or whatever. But the genius of that man was, let's get the right people that will, you know, guide us to where I feel like these are my children and I want them guided a certain way. He wasn't just teaching them tennis. He was teaching them languages and life and, you know, other things to equip them to be so tough between the ears that injuries, media hype, nothing rattled them in the biggest moments as they grew. And that's where he needs to go. And so Tatis Sr. needs to step back and maybe play a little old school baseball with his son and say, you know, it's time to sack up, son. And
I think
be a leader.
One of the issues that I think is surrounding him that I'm noticing. You watch David Ortiz speak about the situation and basically say they echo the same thing that the father said. Why would Major League Baseball do this to this kid? We're hurting our game. We're hurting our product. Well, what we learned about baseball is that when it was at its, I guess, darkest hour, steroids saved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, because this has given me time to think about this. I don't know if actual players think steroids is bad for the game of baseball. I don't know if the people who believe, who are in the David Ortiz boat, the Fernando Tatis Sr. boat, believe that certain things should not be suspendable. And maybe this is a growing sentiment amongst whether it be Latin players or baseball players in general, because
then don't be afraid to say it. Don't say it in code.
Own it.
Don't be afraid to say it. Then step up and say it all. Don't say it in code. Don't say it in this defense of, well, they're jealous of them. That's why. Say it. Say it outright. Say, let's poll every player. Does every hitter want every pitcher juiced like Roger Clemens? And does every pitcher want every hitter juiced like Mark McGwire? Let's say it out loud and let's find out where the league and the players stand on the integrity of that part of the game. Do they want to say, yes, let's go back. Let's whoever. If you have to extend your career to play till you're 45, juice up all you want. Yeah, let your skull get bigger than, you know, Yankee Stadium.
Remember,
for all I care,
that was happening.
Greg Giraldo used to have a great bit where he's like, give them all steroids. Hell, for $45 a ticket and $20 a beer and $50 of parking, I want Barry Bonds with a tail. I want him growing a tail like a dinosaur, hitting 100 home runs a year, right? Like, maybe that's the sentiment, but say it out loud.
I've always thought that somewhere this community existed, because as much as people want things to be on the up and up or even keel, if everyone's doing it, it is on the even keel. Because at one point, you were looking at baseball, and guys who had hit 8 home runs the previous year were hitting 50 home runs the next year. I think Brady Anderson for the Baltimore Orioles hit...
He went from like 12 to 52.
To 52 in a year. Tatis's dad went from, I think, 8 the previous year to 36 the following year on the team with Mark McGwire when he hit 70. So I don't know how to go forward without seeing this as anything other than it's an embarrassment and it's a tarnishment on the Padres organization, and it's a tarnish on the young man's reputation. But he created it,
right? And right now they're banned. Like, yes, there was a heyday, but guess what? You have to adapt. You aren't one of those players. You're not your father. You didn't play in that era. It isn't something you have to try to shake off. It isn't the end of, like, hey, they didn't just come in. You didn't just, you know, start during the steroid era, and they didn't just come in and just go, okay, let's cut this off. No, it was a slow pull of that Band-Aid after the Bonds-Balco incident, and that was a long pull, long, slow pull to then make the game say, we are never going to accept that again, and we are going to, you know, understand who and what was in our rearview mirror. But that was a long time before Fernando Tatis Jr. came on the scene.
So, he may not have even been born yet.
Probably not. Or, you know, whatever he was in a, you know, he was a size of a bat, you know. the point is, either say it out loud. If you're going to talk to the media, don't grab at a straw. Say it out loud. Stick your chest out and say it. And let's see if somebody else comes up and says, you know what? What Tatis Sr. said is right. Or whatever this guy said is kind of right. And you know, I was talking to guys in our locker room, and we kind of think it's this. And maybe that chain of events will turn a tide back to when it was just a wink, wink secret. The day Brady Anderson hit 52 home runs and everybody followed suit, and they just kind of like, whatever, nobody doesn't know, they won't hurt us. And we'll just say that the ball is a little juicier and guys are starting to work out and they're taking their diets and their exercise.
They're playing to their 43 and hitting 35 home runs.
Right, exactly. They're living better than they ever did. And we'll just kind of leave it to the weight room. And we'll wink, wink and say that we juice the balls up a little bit, and that'll get the media going, well, the balls are lighter. And, you know, people will be like, oh, that's okay. I don't care if the balls are a little lighter. I mean, the ball has changed weight over all the eras. I mean, pre-Babe Ruth, it was like a lead rock back when Ty Cobb and those guys were hitting. So, but it all come down to that was what the reason was. They tried to clean it up after sweeping it up. And now they're always still sleeping. They're just little bits of shards of broken glass. Everywhere. They're always sweeping up. And this is another example of some shards of that broken glass laying around the warehouse.
I think we are going to – he's supposed to speak to the team sometime this week. I don't know what the hell he's going to say. Well, I mean, I said this previously on the Kaplan and Cruz show earlier today, and I'm going to repeat this one more time on this show because I think it's vital. If he lies to them – he can lie to us. We're radio people. We're the media, right?
We love it, actually.
Right. We need
the follow-up story to talk about.
Lies are content, right?
I mean, lie to us now so the truth comes out later, and this thing, we milk it. We love that.
A whole nother week. So if you go in that locker room where those guys were counting on you to be the final piece to a World Series push, and you tell them the ringworm story, I don't know if he can recover from that. And not with us, with them. He can come back and he can hit home runs, but if this team, for whatever reason, gets to the playoffs and feels like they fell one bat short, a bat that they thought they had coming, it doesn't matter what happens going forward. Some guys will never forget that because this was their opportunity.
Because they know what it takes to get there, John. They know what it takes to not just get there, but to stay there at that level. The things they've had to go through. Guys like Mike Clevenger's had two Tommy John surgery. Exactly. You know, Manny Machado has been, you know, unfairly sometimes ruled, you know, as a guy that's, you know, in other markets where he doesn't hustle or whatever. And he's here, and he's here to be a leader and win. Like, these guys have, like, they this isn't like hearing an excuse from some highly paid franchise player that's got all these off-field issues. You know, it's an exhausting season, 162 games. It's an exhausting career being a baseball player. They're not there to hear that crap. Tell the truth, own it, and be around the ball club as a silent leader. You said something yesterday about that event you went at, and you said, you know, sometimes when you keep your mouth shut at things, you know, you learn a lot more and you become better because of just sitting around and absorbing the rest of the clubhouse and the manager, Bob Melvin, and the general manager, and just sitting there hush hush and, you know, getting better, making better decisions and waiting this thing out as a guy that's going to be a humble leader instead of a excuse maker. And I think that's exactly where he's got to go this week with this team.
And we've got to go to commercial, but we'll be back. Brown and Law Head, Miter 1090 ESPN. Okay. Happy anniversary. Welcome back to the Brown and Law Head podcast here on the Miter 1090, celebrating its second anniversary. Happy anniversary to us. Shout out to Bill Hagan. Shout out to everybody who kept this wheel rolling. I'm John Brown, and that's Jason Lawhead. We are also known as Browner and Lawhead Monday through Wednesday on the Miter 1090, 6 to 7 p.m. If you missed anything on the show, you can always head over to YouTube and onto the iTunes podcast store under Kaplan and Crew. And we are the show with the date in front of it. We are in the Great Friends Podcast Network. We're the number one thing in the Great Friends Podcast Network because we are the only thing in the Great Friends Podcast Network. Expanding soon. We have covered the Tatis story in great detail. I'm pretty sure anyone who's been hasn't been under a rock, and even if you have been under a rock, you had to have been under a crack rock to not have heard this story and to have some form of opinion on it. And we've shared it, and we're going to try to get something off our chests that him and I feel equally about this. If you brought up LIV Golf, him and I would fight like cats and dogs. If you talk about what NFL team that you don't want to hear from once the season starts, I am interested to hear what Jason Lawhead has to say. So I'll give him the floor. I'll let him explain first, because we're going to talk about NBA Christmas Day, and we're going to talk about the Jeter Manning semi-whatever cast thing that ESPN did that almost made me fall asleep.
Yeah.
But, Jason.
Yeah. And we didn't talk about any of this. This is just a topic you threw at me. We didn't share what our thoughts were, so I'm curious to know what yours is too. But
what NFL team do you not want to hear about anymore?
Well, for as long as I've been a Browns fan, and so many of those years, the answer would have been Browns. For many of those years. I'll tell you know who I don't want to hear about? You know who I'm sick and tired of hearing about and I don't even want to hear about is the Green Bay Packers. Ooh. I'll tell you what. Go to a Super Bowl already. And stop treating this team like they are the 1980s 49ers and sliding them into prime time all the time and the best TV time slot and marquee games and Sunday night. And I'm sick of the 13-3 and the 12-4 and every year and the whole early season drama with maybe they start out bad or Rodgers didn't come to camp on time, or he spouted this, or this guy left, or what are they going to do now? And I'm tired. I'm so tired of like this. And then they never produce anything except maybe disappointing losses to a team they should have never even lost to. And it's just the same old run every year with this team. You know, the one thing, at least with Brady, he took them to Super Bowls. You won Super Bowls. And you might have been tired of hearing about the New England Patriots for as long as you did. But at least at the end of the day and at the end of the line, they usually played up to why you were talking about them all year, right? Like, you know, recently the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, you hear about them a lot. But the excitement that they bring, the fact that they were able to, you know, get a Super Bowl ring in the last few, been to other ones, like you know, put themselves at the top of a very tough division. You know, it's like, oh, Green Bay, are you going to win the NFC North again? Ooh, you know, I mean, big deal. What are you going to walk away with it and lock up the one seed while the NFC West kills each other and the NFC South, you know, prior to that with Breeze? And, you know, it's like, come on, really? So that's my team. I'm tired. I'm more excited after watching an episode or two of Hard Knocks. I'm more excited to follow the Detroit Lions this year than I would be than hear about anything Green Bay Packers. So that's it for me. And those are the reasons why I'd love to hear yours and kind of who you're tired of hearing about and what for.
I don't want to hear another word. And it's not, I can't avoid it, so I will. And I think this is what aggravates me more. I don't want to hear anything about the Dallas Cowboys. I don't, bro. I really don't. Listen, Jerry Jones has been great for the game of football. But Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys haven't done anything of notice since the 90s. The 1990s were 20 plus years ago. Okay. I heard a person telling a story about something. They were like 30 years ago. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah. It's
that wasn't years. That wasn't the 70s. 30 years ago wasn't the 70s. That was the 90s. I'm old now. And when people start telling cowboy stories of how great they were, that was almost 30 years ago.
Their first Super Bowl was 30 years ago. That first of 3 in 5 years was 30 years ago.
They've done nothing. Nothing would be overrated because their owner has so much power within the organization, within the NFL as a conglomerate. He's pretty much the head boss. So this idea that now I'm supposed to believe that Dak Prescott is supposed to be Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I hate Green Bay like the next Chicago Bear fan. But I have no bone to pick with Dallas other than the fact they're not good. The NFC East is not good. It hasn't been good for a while. And because just like the Packers win in the terrible NFC North, the Cowboys pile up wins in the terrible NFC East. And now I'm supposed to think they're good when they're not. And they're going to be worse this year. They had 19 penalties in a preseason game. They led the league in penalties last year. They're not good. Their coach isn't good. Their quarterback's average. Their running back's over the hill and overpaid. And they don't have any weapons. Their defense is okay. Michael Parsons is good. I can't remember this kid's name at corner. He's good. But after that, like, what are we talking about? The Philadelphia Eagles might be better than them this year. But you don't hear a word about the Eagles, who actually have talented players. There's no difference between Jalen Hurts and Dak Prescott, except for some Sleep Number commercials and a paycheck.
Right.
They're the same guy.
Yeah, and the marketing of the company they work for.
Basically. Yeah, they're the same. They're the same guy. I'm just tired. I'm tired, man. Everything because I like watching the sports programs. That makes me a sports meathead. Then you know. I almost said something that's not allowed on the show. Get away from me. I don't care. Call me what you want. I like watching First Take. I like watching Speak for Yourself. I like watching these morning shows. Get Up, Undisputed. I like the shows. I don't care. I don't, every time they turn the Cowboys on, I turn the channel. Just like when Colin Cowherd, the second he says Baker Mayfield, I turn it off. I'm over it. And the Cowboys are number one on my list.
Yeah, and I can see that. They would be right. I mean, they if you had to give me a, you know, top three of that category, they'd be right there. It'd probably be Packers, Cowboys.
Ooh, that's
and
a good question.
Maybe,
do I have two more? I have a person. I don't have a team. I have a person.
Okay.
Russell Wilson. Miss me.
Oh, that's interesting.
Miss it with me, Russell Wilson. Win, bro. Win. I don't want to hear about the let's ride Bronco count. I don't want to win, bro. Win.
Yeah, I mean, this look, Russ has got his opportunity to really like shut up all of that kind of
to
critic.
Set me up.
That critic right there that you are, he's got his big chance this year to silence that critic or to embolden that critic. Really, at the end of the day, this is going to be a defining moment for the existential legacy of Russell Wilson. You know, we know in Seattle he'll always be a hero. It won't matter if he goes 0-17 in Denver two years in a row. He'll always be a hero. But in the annals of the big picture of the NFL and the legacy and the game, and when you go back and look back on it, this is a big defining moment on where he is going to be. Is he just going to be a Seahawk great, or is he going to be an all-time great? Yeah, this is big.
So yeah, the Cowboys are number one, and number two is a person in this, Russell Wilson. I'm also over Aaron Rodgers and all of it. Like, and I mean,
my person would be Aaron Rodgers. You'd get the double whammy out of me.
Yeah, man. Just come on, man.
Go to a Super Bowl again already. So that's what I'm saying. All I got to hear about the Packers. Go to a Super Bowl. It's like with Dallas, it's like win a playoff game. With all the hype you got to hear. If you're going to be the lead story constantly every year just because you have a fan base that's delusional and big enough to feed off of in the media and keep you going. And yes, like you mentioned, their owner, who is, you know, polarizing and entertaining. And even though he's done nothing since, you know, putting, you know, Bill Parcells on the sidelines.
I was in high school.
Yeah, you know, as a team owner and making the team, you know, actually, you know, a shortlist competitive for a world championship, he's always been entertaining. But, like, yeah, stop leading with these guys so much and putting them in prime time until they win a freaking playoff game. And for Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, go to a Super Bowl again. You're supposed to be, like, two Super Bowls in your whole life? He only went to one. Did he go to one?
He went to one.
He went to one. He won a Super Bowl, and that's the only one he went to, right? Yeah, he never lost a Super Bowl. No. So go to a Super Bowl. I mean, you're going on 20 years. Brady's been to 10 of them.
So, yeah, that's it for me when it comes to those teams. I'm glad you chose somebody who I also equally hate, so I didn't have to pick two teams. the NBA released their Christmas Day schedule, and I got it. I'm going to read it for you, and you tell me who does not belong on this schedule.
Right.
It'll be Golden State against Memphis. I mean, that'll be a good game for NBA insiders, the average fan. Right. No, that's a place that should have been Warriors Lakers, which is opening night. Do it again on Christmas. Can't get enough of that. The Mavericks are actually playing the Lakers on Christmas Day. The Nuggets are playing the Suns. I don't know why you would do that. The Knicks are playing the 76ers. I will be asleep during that game. And the Celtics.
That's the lump of coal.
And the Celtics are playing the Bucks. Look, I love the NBA. I'm a huge NBA fan. NBA is my number one sport. I don't know why the league office forces us to watch the Knicks. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't know what they're trying to accomplish with it. The Knicks have done nothing of notice. Even if they say that's because there's rumors again that they're going to trade for Donovan Mitchell. Even if they did, they wouldn't make the playoffs because he's not that kind of guy. So this idea that you need the New York market, but for somehow the Chicago Bulls will be better. They're not on Christmas Day. The Los Angeles Clippers, who might win the NBA championship, they're not on Christmas Day. And whatever's left of the Nets, KD, no KD, Kyrie, no Kyrie, Ben Simmons, they're not on Christmas Day. So you left out three of your marquee teams or marquee players for the Knicks. The Knicks?
Yeah.
Come on, man. And if you're going to give me the Knicks, okay, do the Knicks and the Hawks, because at least they don't like each other. Put it in the Garden. The Garden hates Trae Young. Do that.
Yeah, that's a great point. If you are going to do that, at least create a matchup that is interesting.
Right, that has some history. There's no history between the Knicks and the Sixers. I don't want to watch that. And I'm an NBA guy. I'm one of these people, when football's on Christmas Day, I would prefer to watch the Warriors play the Grizzlies. I don't give a damn who's playing if it's not the Bears or the Chargers. But, I mean, with this schedule, I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I love the Memphis Golden State matchup because obviously Ja Morant is kind of the next kind of, you know, the pass torch being passed to that type of exciting player, kind of player we haven't, version of a player we really haven't seen like Steph was and has been. And I like the fact that, you know, Memphis really stepped on the gas at around the Christmas Day point last year and accelerated. So hopefully that carries over. But if Memphis is off to that kind of win-loss record to start the season, how they kind of middle and ended it last year, if they're one of these teams with kind of a gaudy win-loss record and Morant and Golden State is the defending champ, that could be the best game of the day at the end of the day, even though it kind of looks a little weird when you write Memphis Golden State down. Like you said, to the average fan, you know, they're not going to look at that matchup as marquee when it comes to just you know, judging the book by its cover, but that could be actually the best of all of the games. Like you said, Nuggets, Suns, that's a Thursday night on TNT if there's nothing else on, you know. And so,
I'll read them again.
To force that Sixers-Knicks rivalry for decades, but they're never good at the same time.
The Mavs,
you know, when Dr. J and Moses were great in the Sixers in the 80s, the Knicks were a disappointment. When the Knicks got good with Ewing and Pat Riley and those groups, the Sixers were a disappointment. So they've never been able to, you know, have that same type of these are the top two teams that could win it in the East ever at the same time.
I would also say, in addition to that, I don't want to see the Lakers play the Mavericks. Where's the history in that? Where's the
right?
What am I looking for in this matchup as an average fan? Do you think you can just get me to the TV because LeBron's there?
Right. No one. It's a LeBron Luka matchup. That's all it is.
But you would then have to understand that the general public. See, this is why the NFL crushes all the other leagues, because the leagues assume the viewer knows who Luka is. They don't. Right. They don't. The NBA viewing public knows who Luka is. The average fan that is sitting at home on Christmas Day, they can tune into an NFL game because they know that the two NFL teams, I'll watch that. The NBA has to pull you to the screen. Luka doesn't do it. He just doesn't. LeBron, of course he does. He's got a generation of highlights to prove it to you. Hell, his son might draw more than Luka does. And Luka's a fantastic player. So I just, you know, they're going to get crushed on. They're going to get crushed on Christmas. Then this narrative is going to be that no one watches the NBA, which annoys the hell out of me, because the NBA targets its audience in a different way than the NFL does, because it's 82 games and not 17 games or 18 games or whatever it's up to at this point. So I thought the NBA should have done a better job, and they failed. Like, putting the drama of Brooklyn on Christmas Day works for me.
Well, then they've oversaturated it, the schedule. You know,
that's also true. Too many games.
Yeah, I like keeping it at two, maybe a third game if the marquees and the matchups are just too good to you know, not take your hands off of. Great, put that third game in there because, man, this year just seems to be a perfect, you know, with these types of teams and who's returning where or this guy went. And, you know, I just, they've oversaturated. They've forced too many matchups, like you've said. Nobody wants to see the Suns and Nuggets on Christmas Day. I mean, as good as the Suns, you know, exciting as Booker is, and, you know, Jokic, MVP, like, nobody wants to see those two teams on Christmas Day. Nobody cares.
You know, no one else cares about Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez talking about their version of baseball's Manning cast. You know, I was afraid this would happen. I was 100% afraid that this would happen, that the Manning cast success is you put together two brothers who've been brothers all their life. They've got inside quirks. Watching Peyton Manning watch a football game is just hilarious to me. He's so into it. And watching his brother Eli be almost in pain to be there with a joke here and there, I thought that was great. I thought it was fantastic. And then when they brought guys on to interview, they kind of lost me a little bit, because then the fun left out and they started trying to actually interview dudes, and that's not why I watch it.
Right.
What Alex Rodriguez and Derek Jeter attempted to do was like watching a divorced couple have to sit at their child's recital and talk to the teacher when it was over. It was terrible. Derek Jeter clearly doesn't care for A-Rod. Or if he does, he does not show it well. And Alex Rodriguez is so about Alex Rodriguez, I don't understand why you even needed another person. It should have just been the Alex cast.
Yeah, you can't force, like, you. That just shows that you can't force that kind of a thing. That you can't create that. That Manning cast was special, like you said, because, you know, the fans grew up understanding the differences in their personalities as quarterbacks, right? Like, we understood as the fan, we were guided just by, if you were a fan of the NFL, you know, you couldn't stay away from knowing who Peyton and Eli Manning were, their father's royalty, so they come from that tree. So then we are told, you know, Peyton, he's like the coach on the field, and he's the more engaged guy, and he's always thinking football. And Eli was just the man. Even the pressure in New York doesn't bother me. Nothing. I'm even just kind of, oh yeah, whatever. You don't know what I'm feeling really, because, you know, even when the media wants to hang me, I'm still going out there and playing every game. And I'm the only guy that could beat Tom Brady in a Super Bowl. So he had this kind of just, nothing bothers me. And that showed so well. They just played to them two personalities that we were already, you know, given as fans. We didn't have to try to understand where they were coming from. And Jeter and A-Rod, you know, and baseball is so much different. Like, you know, you have to be really talented. Baseball, you have to be really talented at being boring to broadcast baseball and to be great, right? Because it is that kind of mundane, slow. That's why Vin Scully will be the greatest of all time, because nobody was better at having to navigate the boring. Whereas,
okay, we're running out of time. Let's do this.
A-Rod's boring. That's just basic.
Let's make a plan to do a live cast during the NFL season. Brown and Lawhead, we'll see y'all tomorrow. Peace.
I love it.